In our continuing tale of Rav Boruch becoming a chosid and a talmid of the Baal Shem Tov, we were telling about Tver Leah and her husband Rav Yitzchok, who was the sister of Rav Boruch, and her husband Rav Yosef Yitzchok, who came from the town of Sharei, and over there settled a Jew for a number of years. His name was Rav Hirsch Leib, who came there to teach the poor, uneducated Jews of the community Torah, and he was especially close with a Jew called Rabbi Yankov Kerpel. Rabbi Yankov Kerpel had a friend whose name was Rabbi Gershon Yitzchok, also a very ignorant man, and Rabbi Gershon Yitzchok, you will recall, had the inn and the store and the fishing rights from the local nobleman, but a Catholic priest, a virulent anti-Semite, had come to town and had gotten everybody not to stop in at the inn or in the store. And you can understand what happened to Gershon Yitzchok's sustenance. And at the same time, the fish were not biting, and the debt which he owed the old nobleman grew and grew. And finally, the nobleman became so incensed that he said that he gives Gershon Yitzchok 1 month to wipe off the debts completely, and he gives him no more time. And this was in the depth of winter when the roads were blocked and no one came to the village. And Gershon Yitzchok saw no way of possibly getting any money from anybody as a loan. Here, the Catholic anti-Semitic priest intervened to give the old landowner the following advice. There's no point in your throwing the Jew and his wife into prison. What will you get out of it? It'll be an added cost to feed them there, that's all. Better take my advice and take one of their sons as a pledge. You will then see how quickly the Jew will find the money to pay you. And failing to obtain the money, you will at any rate have managed to secure one Jewish unbeliever and bring him into our fold. The priest indicated that the 12-year-old son of the Jew would be the one that they should take as a pledge. The boy's name was David. The old nobleman seized the Jewish lad and told his father how much time he had to redeem his pledge, 1 month. A terrible cry pervaded Gershon Yitzchok's house. The whole household was in tears, grief-stricken at the dreadful calamity that had befallen them. Where could they possibly find anyone to give them the money they needed to redeem their dear David from the hands of this wicked old tyrant? Their friend Yankov Kerpel hadn't visited them in weeks on account of the extremely bad weather. About a week before the end of the time allowed for bringing the money owed, the old nobleman called Gershon Yitzchok and his wife to him. He received them with a scream of hate when he saw that they had come without the money. I warn you that if you do not bring the money you owe me by the end of the time limit, you will both become my slaves, and your son David will be kept by me forever. You will have to give of your services to pay me for the capital you owe me, and David will represent the interest. David is now in the hands of the priest, who is going to convert him to our faith. I would have you know that he is already being prepared for it, and both the priest and I have decided in any case, irrespective of your paying me, that he is to become a Christian. When Gershon Yitzchok and his wife heard these ominous words, they both fell at the feet of the nobleman, crying for mercy. Please, let us have our son back, and we promise you we will bring you every penny we owe you without fail. Only take our son away from the priest and give him back to us, they pleaded amidst their sobs. The old nobleman refused to listen to them. As for yourselves, you can buy yourselves out of slavery if you bring me the money in time, he said. But as for David, he is lost to you forever. Do you hear? And he struck out at Gershon Yitzchok with the whip he held in his hand to show him that he was the master. He struck again and again, not caring whether it caught Gershon Yitzchok or his wife, until they both collapsed bleeding. They were carried out more dead than alive. Gershon Yitzchok and his wife are too desperately worried about their dear David to think of their own wounds. So, as soon as they could pull themselves together, they hastened to call on the young nobleman, who was so much more humane than his terrible father. They began to pour out their hearts to him, begging him to use his influence and see that their son was not converted. The young nobleman promised to do all he could to help them, although he said he did not know what he could possibly do. He promised that he would at least find out what the priest was doing with David and what was happening to him. They had had no words from him and no news of him, and they were just broken-hearted. The news that the young nobleman eventually brought to them was in one sense a consolation and in another absolutely shattering. It appeared that the priest had from the first intended to use force in coercing the young Jewish lad to accept conversion. Although, as we know, David had not had much knowledge of things Jewish, for he had not even been to a cheder, not been taught anything of Torah, he yet determinedly rebelled against this forcible attempt at taking him away from Judaism and making him accept Christianity. The priest ordered him to eat pork, but David persistently refused to do so. In fact, he would eat nothing that the priest gave him. The priest was furious at the obstinacy of the young lad and began to beat him, but he only succeeded in making David even more obstinate than ever. David refused to give in. The priest struck at him until he lay torn and bleeding on the floor, unable to move. Only then did the priest leave him alone. The young nobleman tried to cheer Gershon Yitzchok and his wife by pointing out to them that it would certainly be a matter of some days before the priest could attempt to do anything further with David. This conversion was going to take him longer than he had anticipated. Heavy-hearted as the parents were, they yet tried to see some consolation in what the young nobleman had told them. When they reached home, they began to wonder and ponder as to ways and means of raising this gigantic sum of money that they owed the nobleman. They could see no relief from any source, so they decided they would sell every stick and rag they possessed. They would sell even their clothing and their bedding on which they slept, and every bit of clothing except for what they were wearing, and penny by penny they would gather together enough money to pay the nobleman all the capital they owed him, as well as the interest for which he was making them suffer so mercilessly. A few days yet remained till the time limit was due to expire, when Gershon Yitzchok looked for a buyer for his inn. There was a wealthy non-Jew in the village who was willing to buy the inn, but he offered a much lower price for it than Gershon Yitzchok had expected. Yet, under the pressing circumstances, what could he do about it? So he sold the inn and began selling his household possessions too. He must, at all costs, save his son from conversion. Gershon Yitzchok and his wife made a calculation as to how much they could hope to raise from literally everything they possessed which could be turned into money, and they came to the sad conclusion that the sum would not be sufficient to cover their debt. The distracted father decided he would have to make a trip to one of his sons-in-law, who lived about 20 miles away from the village. Perhaps he could help him out, but the roads were so impassable that after a short while he reluctantly had to turn back home, and he had the greatest difficulty in getting back home. Meanwhile, the inn had been taken over by this rich non-Jew, and all his non-Jewish friends and neighbors made their way there to make merry. Gershon Yitzchok and his wife saw how the new owner sold everything below price. He seemed to have no idea at all about how to run an inn. "He will soon become broke the way he's going on," said Gershon to his wife. He then tried to show the new owner how to conduct his business. The next day, Gershon Yitzchok was greatly surprised to see this new non-Jewish owner coming to him with the news that he had repented about the purchase of the inn and wanted his money back. He firmly told Gershon Yitzchok that the priest had called him and told him that that was what he had to do. The priest had told him he was silly for paying the Jew any money for everything. He was going to be taken away from him anyway. He further told him if the Jew refused to give him the money back, he was to give him a good beating. Gershon Yitzchok did insist on the fact that the sale had been completed and that he could not return him the money. The sons of this new owner thereupon made a murderous attack upon Gershon Yitzchok until in sheer helplessness he had to return the cash. And so Gershon now again became the owner of the inn and incurred a great loss in the exchange, for during the day in which the non-Jew had been in charge of the inn, he had sold out the complete stock at cut-rate prices, so that Gershon Yitzchok was left only with the bare walls. Gershon saw that it was impossible for him to find money for the nobleman and began to rack his brain for some way out of his trouble. Suddenly, he had an inspiration. He would go to Share, where his friend Yankov Karpel lived, and seek his aid. For were they not childhood friends? Whenever Yankov Karpel used to come to this village, he always stayed at the home of Gershon Yitzchok. And now that he had become something of a scholar, thanks to the efforts of Herr Schleib, he would make a practice of teaching Gershon Yitzchok something every time he visited him. Poor Gershon Yitzchok, however, hadn't a very good brain for study, and so whatever Yankov Karpel taught him during his stay at the inn was completely forgotten as soon as Yankov Karpel departed. And on his next visit, Yankov Karpel had to begin teaching him all over again from the very beginning. Gershon Yitzchok called himself a fool for not thinking of his good friend sooner. Gershon Yitzchok had made himself ready to set out when suddenly armed guards appeared, saying that they had come on the orders of the old nobleman to see that he did not run away from the village. They had been sent to keep watch over him, that he not escape. That was positively and absolutely the final and last straw. Gershon Yitzchok was virtually a prisoner and couldn't leave his own house. He knew these guards well. They were men from the village, and so he began to plead with them that they allow him to go to Share so that he obtain the money to pay the nobleman. After all, he said, all I'm trying to do is to get there and get the money. It doesn't do anybody good if I'm staying over here. One of the guards suggested that they take him to the nobleman and he could ask his permission to make the trip. Gershon Yitzchok agreed to their suggestion and they went along with him, guarding him on his way to the nobleman. When the nobleman heard Gershon Yitzchok's request, he struck him in anger. Gershon Yitzchok begged him to be given this chance and said that the nobleman could send him under armed guard. Then he would have no fear of his trying to escape. On this condition, the nobleman finally agreed to let him go. And so, under heavy guard, Gershon Yitzchok trudged out of his home, broken, and finally, after a long journey in the snow, reached his friend's house, Yankov Karpel's house, in Share. When Yankov Karpel had heard the whole sad story, he had a talk with his wife, and they both agreed that they would sell everything they possessed if only they could help their friend save his son from Shmat, from conversion, God forbid. Yankov Karpel borrowed some money to add to his own, and then accompanied his friend back to the village. When they reached the inn, they found Gershon Yitzchok's wife in tears, wringing her hands. She told them that word had just reached her that the priest had given poor David another beating because he had refused to eat pork and listen to the priest's talk about conversion. He had then been thrown into the sty with the pigs. The priest had let it be known that the next day he would convert to David, whether he liked it or not. Gershon Yitzchok rushed off with his wife to the nobleman to pay him all the money he owed him, capital plus interest, and begged him to release his child. The nobleman said he could do nothing about it, as he had already placed the boy into the hands of the priest and had also given his consent to convert him. When Gershon Yitzchok and his wife heard this, they broke down completely, and their heart-rending sobs filled the air. The nobleman became infuriated at this disturbance they were making in his court, and had them beaten until they had to be carried away unconscious. Meanwhile, Yankov Karpel had not remained idle. During his visits to this village, he had made the acquaintance of quite a number of the local non-Jewish villagers. They liked the way Yankov Karpel had done business with them, always treating them fairly and kindly. And so Yankov Karpel decided he would see what he himself could do about getting David out of the hands of the priest. Yankov Karpel called on a number of these customers of his and told them that the priest was holding a Jewish boy by compulsion and by force against the wishes of himself and his parents, and trying to compel him to accept Christianity against his will. On top of this, he had made several murderous attacks upon the defenseless lad, and moreover had thrown him into the pigsty with the pigs. These particular villagers were well disposed towards Jews, for they had always found them to be good people, and so they listened with great sympathy to Yankov Karpel and were quite indignant when he told them that the priest was trying to convert the Jewish boy totally against his will. But when they heard about the rough treatment that the priest had administered to the child, they were more than indignant. They became absolutely furious. Yankov Karpel also managed to contact the young nobleman who had always been friendly toward the Jews. This is the nobleman, the young son of the cruel father who had treated these poor couple, Gershon Yitzchok and his wife, so badly. And the young nobleman was, in contrast, very favorably disposed and had in no way agreed to or approved of his father's cruel conduct in the case of Gershon Yitzchok. Moreover, the young nobleman had also disapproved of his father allowing himself to be so influenced by the virulently anti-Semitic priest. "Look, my friend," said Yankov, "you know that Gershon Yitzchok has taken the money to your father and paid every penny he owed him, even before the end of the one-month time limit. My wife and I have given everything we possessed to help our friend in his difficulty. Yet all the acknowledgement your father gave my friend and his wife was to tell them that they are now free, but their son is lost to them. He belongs to the priest. I ask you, isn't this a shame that cries to the very heavens? The priest is not trying to win the boy by reasoning with him and trying to convince him, but he uses blows for arguments, and when David refuses to be browbeaten into accepting the conversion and refuses even to eat pork, he is thrown to the pigs in the pigsty. You must do something to get David away from this evil human being. You are human, I know, said Yankov Karpel to the young nobleman. And you must prove your humaneness by bringing poor, wounded David back to his grief-stricken, desperate parents. Yankov Karpel's words moved the young nobleman to action. He went to the priest and ordered him to release the Jewish boy. It was stirring up the villagers, and they would make trouble if the boy was not released. The priest had no alternative but to release David, who was now more dead than alive. His arms and legs were broken, and he had to be strapped in splints and bandages. Medicine was administered to him, and he recovered to some extent. Yankov Karpel now took David home with him to Shari. As soon as David was well enough, Yankov Karpel sent him to Borisov to study at the yeshiva there. Meanwhile, Yankov Karpel became head over heels in debt, and in order to clear everything that he owed, he sold his house and his garden and everything else he possessed. But this did not worry Yankov Karpel or his wife. They felt it had all been more than worthwhile. They had helped to save their friend's son from a fate worse than death. They did not even tell anyone how it was that they had to sell everything. Why should anyone think they were boasting about the sacrifice they had made? So they kept silent, but their moral satisfaction outweighed any material loss they had suffered. They did not want to share the mitzvah they earned with anyone, so they would not turn to anyone for financial assistance. Thus, they got deeper and deeper into debt, and when Yankov Karpel became seriously ill and was given the additional name of Chaim, they sank still deeper into debt. What happened with Yankov Karpel and how this relates to Dvereleya and Rabbi Yosef Yitzchak, her husband, the sister and the brother-in-law of Raboruch, the father of the Alter Rebbe, and how this circle is concluded, Im Yirtzeh Hashem, in the coming installation with which we will conclude this part of the tale of how Raboruch became a chosid of the Baal Shem Tov, and God willing, we will continue with additional stories of Raboruch and his relationship with the Baal Shem Tov in concluding installments.